It was difficult and unsettling listening to my friend, Ben, a gifted oral surgeon, turn bitter and hell-bent on one thing, spending every dollar of money at his disposal.
To keep his wife, her lawyers, and less directly his children, from getting any as divorce papers were signed, ultimately while Ben was at the Pinellas County Jail. Operating in Palm Harbor and Newport Richey, Florida had become an increasingly difficult struggle before incarceration and seemingly incomprehensible afterward.
After smooth talking and lying his way into an acquittal for that particular assault charge in 2014, Dr. First was soon back in practice and the sedation saddle. I visited Ben at the Pinellas County Jail numerous times for several weeks while he awaited trial. It was gut-wrenching then and when he was released, and I picked him up at 4 a.m. before getting him a decent hotel room on St. Pete Beach at the Postcard Inn for his first homeless week. Although he was mad at me for arriving late to get him at Denny's near the jail, I wasn't worried about my now scrawny-looking sober friend expressing embarrassment over his disheveled post-incarceration attire with a garbage bag of belongings as an accessory and little more than a couple dollars to buy a cup of coffee. It served him right. Ben's now ex-wife faced a much less predictable encounter when she picked him up 3 years prior after his hospitalization for overdosing on nitrous oxide. Still not back to normal after 2 days of hallucinating and basically being incapacitated.
They sent him home from, you know, being bankrupted with me, with no kind of like the hospital didn't even require for him to be accountable of anything. They just were, the papers just said, hopefully he'll find a psychiatrist. Hopefully he'll check in with PRN, which was the group for, you know, doctors that fall into the, you know, drug or alcohol spectrum. So I just figured, you know, I went to pick him up and that was not Ben anymore. I mean, that was definitely not Ben.
The discharge document noted that Ben wasn't yet quite normal upon his release, likely due to the severe depletion of B12 that occurs from inhaling massive amounts of nitrous oxide. It can lead to neurological damage among other severe repercussions. Another thing that caught my eye was that Ben had agreed to not practice for a week or two. How would you like to have that first appointment of Dr. First when he again felt up to performing complex oral surgery procedures? Certainly a much more complicated profession than merely shucking teeth. Ben's mounting transgressions over the years didn't simply slide by undetected by those in a position to make a difference. The discharge papers indicated that Dr. First had already been in Florida's program for impaired practitioners, today euphemistically referred to as the Professionals Resource Network, or PRN, which had previously stood for Physicians Recovery Network. Obviously, some PR brains dreamed up the more palatable program name, although many states still use this more-to-the-point label. In Ben's case, it was more relapse than recovery. Keep in mind that in 1985, Florida was among the first states to create this means for doctors to supposedly get the care they need. In the majority of instances, the impairment pertains to drugs, alcohol, or both. Our state program also supports practitioners who may face other forms of impairment. Here's how the Florida PRN website describes this questionable program.
The primary mission of PRN is to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public while supporting the integrity of the healthcare team and other professionals. PRN is an alternative to the disciplinary process of the Department of Health and the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. Due to increased education of licensed healthcare practitioners, hospitals, and other employees, healthcare practitioners participating in PRN do so voluntarily instead of being reported to or by these departments. Many healthcare professionals participate in PRN instead of the disciplinary process.
That last line strikes me as a real head scratcher. Many healthcare professionals participate in PRN instead of the disciplinary process? Sure, Ben was far from normal and he may not have killed any patients in surgery, although he told me one obese man came to him for a particular procedure deemed high risk relative to his overall health. Ben did it against better judgment. He needed the money that badly. The man went into cardiac arrest and subsequently died in a hospital emergency room. Of all the years I knew him, I never saw Ben as distressed as he was at that time. It happened somewhat soon after he was flat broke, recently released on probation with an automatic 10-year prison sentence for any additional violations. As a felon who took a plea deal instead of going to trial on a separate domestic violence with strangulation charge, plus tampering with a witness, the girlfriend he choked into not testifying against him, that also meant he shouldn't have had guns, let alone a perpetual medical license to practice as an oral surgeon in Florida, or any state. He was dead set against going back behind bars, but this was a much greater matter of life and death to him. It meant Dr. First may be barred from ever shucking teeth again. His livelihood and only remaining source of pride would be gone, and likely for good. The medical board and state communications liaisons refused to answer questions via interview or email. Just as the PRN website acknowledges, the Department of Health intentionally stays out of the picture and, by default, any sense of responsibility. That is ostensibly until a patient gets hurt or injured in some way and bothers to submit a formal complaint or lawsuit. Although that seriously worried Ben, he showed no concern or remorse for what he hid much more effectively. Regularly abusing women physically and emotionally, truly terrorizing those he felt most passionately about. In Ben's mind, some women actually abused him, like the one he met at a bar who showed great interest in a sexual excursion in his hotel room, which excited him too, but not when she showed up with her husband. He told me that threw him off big time, as he had to wait until they had sex with each other before leaving him alone. As months and years rolled by, he sunk to lows unknown to me until after his death. I was no longer even worried about him taking his own life. More teeth were coming his way for shucking, and I was in awe of sorts because it looked like Dr. First had a shot at hitting the maxillofacial jackpot all over again. Before he even became a doctor, Ben was already trained to beat the system. Here's Mary, his wife, reflecting on Ben's uneven admittance into the Medical College of Georgia at Augusta University.
It's a hard presidency. When we went to Augusta, he had to take a drug test, and he failed it. So we had a party where the residents, like the dean, everybody for the party, and he was really charming to me and Jared. And I still believe to this day that if Ben would have been by himself, he would have never given him another chance, and he passed it.
He tricked the test.
Yeah. I don't know how, but he did it.
Ben's freewheeling ways and lavish spending habits were about to go into overdrive as he completed residency.
Once he started making money, it was insane. I mean, he just, you know, he couldn't give me enough. Whatever I wanted, however I wanted, I would wake up in the morning. I always had cash. And we had a joke that he always said, like, he would call me from the office, like, I remember this time, Mary. And I'm like, what? It's like, I didn't leave you hundreds. I left you 20s, because I used to say, man, nobody can give me change for hundreds. Leave like $300-$500 a day. Sometimes it would be $1,500 in cash. He would actually give me a salary just to go shopping, to do whatever I wanted. And that's besides anything that I wanted for the children.
I painstakingly sought data on the decisions related to permitting Dr. First to practice for nearly 2 decades, almost uninterrupted, except while he was in rehab programs and jail. All the relevant agencies I contacted and public records requests I submitted went nowhere. I wasn't just looking for how they could possibly neglect taking more meaningful action given the circumstances about Ben. How do the Florida Health Medical Board officials track, monitor, and assess the effectiveness of the state's program for all impaired physicians they know about? From delving into the magnitude of issues relevant to Florida and the entire nation, my firm belief is they don't know enough and haven't tried hard enough to know. However, looking over highlights from a related conference last year, it appears that the state knows they need to know more. An initiative was cited where the peers in power are looking to gather statistics relevant to program participants over the past 10 years, so they can seemingly get beyond feeble references to how many of the hundreds and thousands of impaired docs who retain or get their licenses back. Ben was in the program at least twice, and he was in a hell of a lot of trouble many more times. He didn't deserve a license to perform oral surgery, nor should he have been able to carry weapons or legally conceal them. These were licenses of peril. State authorities, however, took steps years ago to basically remove them from more direct awareness and supervision of these questionable practitioners, who are mainly participating because of drug and alcohol abuse, although any form of impairment may qualify for assistance. The doctors pay thousands to participate in the not-for-profit program, which is administered by authorized contractors who oversee related recovery plan creation and oversight through completion. A main rationale for outsourcing respective decisions and actions is to encourage those at risk to self-report. There's sense to that on the surface, but why does the Medical Board of Florida turn its back or a blind eye to repeat offenders like Ben when nurses, for example, would never be able to continue in the medical profession if they have any violations like Ben? At least not until their for-profit program can clear them, even if only arrested or cited for something like driving under the influence and not necessarily convicted.
He kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse, and he kept doing more and more and more. And it was just, I felt like my family was in danger, and not by him at that point, but by other people he was associating himself with.
I'm outside the former office, Dr. First. It's a different kind of scene. Evening's nice and cool, but inside, grim things happen. Not that I ever saw him doing nitrous oxide inside, but I knew of other things that shouldn't have happened. The escapades with women, a number of cases who worked for him, staff workers. One, notoriously, he was inside the building hiding in the attic when the arrival of his wife and her hired private investigator who tracked Ben, and whenever I was with him, presumably the two of us. But, you know, all that aside, the strangeness, the woman that's on his staff hiding in the attic, there are patients arriving at 8 in the morning. His wife is hounding him and aware of what's going on. They ferret out the staff worker, and the patients had to wait. I didn't get too many details, but I'm sure they were quite stunned to witness all of this. And it was just another day in the life of Dr. Ben First.
The first time I found out he was having an affair, or when I verified that he was having an affair, I didn't even shut him down then. So I didn't leave Ben because he was cheating on me. I left Ben because I was tired, and I wanted my kids to stop seeing, you know, the nightmare that they were waking up to every day, and I wanted them to have a calm, nice, predictable environment. And I wanted to give myself a chance to, you know, to feel in control of my life.
And that was far from possible around Ben. It eventually became all about drugs, sex, shucking teeth, and shedding cash. Donnie, who knew Ben well, also tried to talk sense into him.
So he always went for the finest with everything, with wine, women, cars. Come on, Mary, she's a very beautiful woman. I mean, it was just he always wanted something different, and he was always with something different. And when he had money, you know, sorry, he had two women in his car in the Mercedes, and he had talked to Mary, and they were in the car, but he never shut the phone off. And she heard the whole conversation. She played the whole thing for me. It's like 30 minutes, and they were driving to Sarasota.
Whatever the road to ruin Ben was on, I wondered if it was by choice or fate. I also wondered if I really needed to go along for the ride. My thinking centered on helping this friend who had reached a peak in his profession, yet an abysmal low in life. More money than anyone needed, now leaking. No, flowing from his pockets. On purpose. More toys than time to use them. More women than emotion to care about anyone. I asked Donnie about something that happened years prior at Ben's Palm Harbor estate that struck me as an ominous sign subsequent to Ben's second overdose on nitrous oxide and hospitalization in 2011. A deer had impaled itself on the wrought iron fence in the backyard preserve of the property. I was out having dinner with Ben when his wife called, frantic, asking him what to do as she could see that the deer was hanging upside down by a hind leg, suffering, clinging to life. Not much could be done, although Ben later skinned and butchered the animal for meals.
The fence was kind of tall because Mary wanted the deer out. Ben wanted a shorter fence, which like a 4-foot fence, so the deer could just jump it. It's mainly the deer the problem. Cannot jump the fence. So that deer, whether he was putting food in his yard again, still in this port that he cleared. Well, he would hunt back in the preserve more, but with still bow. His property with bow.
Bow hunting.
Yeah. Well, he also told me he shot some raccoons with his silencer.
Whether Dr. First should have had guns or license to carry them is debatable, but not in my mind.
What's wrong with America? You know, it's not the gun rights that are a problem. It's not the gun issue is everybody's got the guns, and you make guns illegal. They're just illegal, but everybody still has the guns. Who we need to have them in their hands and who we don't. And it's not going to get solved.
Yeah.
So Ben wasn't supposed to have a gun, we both know, at the time, from prior years, from prior 2 or 3 years, but it's not hard to get one.
Ben's son Jared saw it as an obsession.
Sometimes I wonder why he liked guns so much, because he had hundreds of them.
Now, he is someone who was going through a bout of paranoia.
There was more than one call. There was one. There would be times that he would send me videos, and he wasn't at the New Perugia. He was in a hotel, and it was just texting.
What was he communicating?
He would send me a video of, and I don't know if he's laying on the floor or what, but he's looking under the, it's just a video. It wouldn't send me any word, writ, just a video. So I could tell it was a door, and you'd see a shadow, which I would assume it was a hotel and people were walking by in the hall, and it would cast the shadow of their feet going by, and he thought it was a camera. Because I would ask him, I said, where are you at? And he goes, I'm in a hotel in St. Pete. Because at one time he lived in a real nice place down there.
And it was all part of Ben's divorce-triggered spending spree. A high-rise condo overlooking the city in the Gulf of Mexico, adorned with a new young woman who allegedly became pregnant with his child, yet had a miscarriage. Both accommodations were fleeting, like so much of the last 5 years of Ben's life.
Call me once in a while and go to Fitzgerald's, which was my favorite bar down there in Newport Richey, and it's just down the street from his office. And this is when I was telling you, he would have five double vodkas within an hour that we were there. And the first one was only 30 seconds,
Yeah.
We
couldn't drink them fast enough. Did you see signs or think Ben was a violent person at any time?
The first thing that I thought that he was getting broken internally, the most violent thing I heard him doing was breaking down his own door with the cops coming, when Mary wouldn't let him in the house with a crowbar. And he calls me afterwards. He didn't break any laws. He was breaking his own door. But I'm like, Ben, why would you, why wouldn't you just regroup, back out of the driveway. Kids were there, everything. Why would you do that? I mean, it makes no sense. It makes no sense monetarily. It makes no sense.
Did you ask him that?
Yes.
And what did he say?
He says, I'm just not putting up with that shit. She's not going to get me out of my house. And I'm like, well, there's an old saying, you're loading the gun. You're handing it to him, You could see a digression. And then first time he was in jail, which I didn't visit him a lot in jail, and I would send him money for, so then again, nothing. And Mary wouldn't send him any money. He wanted money for, buying potato chips and whatever they sell in there, the dispensary or whatever. And so I sent some money to his account, which I believe he paid me all for, That wasn't the issue then, even when I bailed him out. He did. He paid back everything. He always did, But you could see a slide going the wrong way. And then that's the same time. And then he's out of money. Then he's hanging around with different women. There were people that needed help themselves. Reality, which is the toughest drug, totally not on his plate at the time.
What was inside Ben hid pretty well in some respects. Summer, an assistant at his Newport Richey office, had this perspective.
He's very, very talented at what he does. He wasn't arrogant. He was very confident. was good at what he did. He see the whole process happening and he did it. He was like a working machine. Like he knew exactly how to do it and use his skill set, how to make things go faster and better, but in a really, really good quality way. And people were happy. He was very nice for one. He was kind. He was very respectful. He never did anything disrespectful in any way. No sexual advances, no anything ridiculous that was kind of off-putting. I liked being there. It felt safe being there. It felt like a family. It was built up that way. He grew a garden in the back. And he was so proud of his garden. He'd always water in the morning, sometimes during lunch. And he loved to cook. So sometimes he'll get things from his garden and he'll make us lunch. And we'll just kind of just hang around and talk. And if there weren't any patients, he would just, would just talk and just kind of hang out and, go over what's going on with our families. And just, it was just a very, very chill environment. So it was nice to be there. And which I didn't really get a lot from other bosses, is every day he would end with a thank you. And it didn't seem like a lot, but it was different because it wasn't like a fake thank you. It was very appreciative that we were there and for things that we did to help him. So it was nice to be there. It didn't feel heavy to go to work.
Anne Marie, a bartender at a pub across the street from where Ben's Palm Harbor office was located, and just a mere mile or two from where he committed the worst atrocity of his life, had this to say.
I remember him being a normal, regular customer.
Did you know he was a doctor that worked across the street?
I did not. I don't remember him like acting out or behaving any certain way. I just remember you guys coming in every now and then.
It was always chill.
Yeah, everybody's usually chill.
Although that was the case at this particular watering hole, Ben wasn't always chill in public. In fact, I watched my doctor friend on numerous occasions instigate trouble with some of the largest men I've ever seen. Any who wore Affliction-branded apparel were those who challenged his credentials. And not necessarily that he was a licensed oral surgeon, although that happened too. It could be something as benign as when the muscle heads wearing tight-fitting Affliction t-shirts questioned his claim that he hailed from Philadelphia. With acerbic precision, Dr. First would stir it up, poking and pressing buttons to agitate, then back down or welcome invitations to step outside. At such a moment, I made it clear I wanted no part of a face mashing and said he could meet me in the parking lot or find his own way home. I had already been an idiotic teenager once before and had no interest in repeating the experience in my late 50s. I chided my friend and mocked his behavior, trying to keep it as light as possible, suggesting we do something a little less dangerous next time, like pulling a school fire alarm. If you met Ben for the first time, you may not know what to think. It could be the aloof, headstrong, and agitated Ben, or a more relaxed, down-to-earth version, which was far less prevalent in the waning weeks and months of his life. In the next episode,